Welcome to Money and Racism, the podcast that delves deep into the intersection of finance and racial disparities. I'm your host and money EQ specialist, Dr. Joe Burns. I'm here to guide you through a series of thought-provoking conversations with people of color that aim to uncover the intricate relationships between money and systemic racism. Whether you're curious about the subject, seeking insights, or ready to join the fight against systemic injustices, money and racism is your space to learn, discuss, and take action. So, join us every week as we engage in free-flowing conversations that challenge the status quo and encourage critical thinking. Together, we'll work towards a more equitable and just financial world. Today's episode, we have Reverend Dr. Tammy Denise. She's no stranger to tragedy and loss. She's been navigating trauma personally and professionally for more than 40 years. She uses intersections of faith, education, and her life experiences to create a heart-centered approach to healing and wellness. Reverend Tammy is an innovative and impactful group facilitator for those facing tragedy, grief, and loss. Reverend Tammy is co-founder and president of Carrie's Touch, a 501c3 nonprofit breast cancer organization established to enrich the lives of Black American women diagnosed with the disease. She is an 18-year breast cancer survivor and has spent the past 16 years coaching cancer patients and their families through the trauma of cancer diagnosis, treatment, and reentry after journeying through cancer. She is recognized as an expert in the field of breast cancer and Black women and is the co-principal investigator for Project SOAR, which is Speaking Our African American Realities, in partnership with the University of California, Los Angeles. Project SOAR examines the unique experiences of Black American women who are diagnosed with breast cancer. Reverend Tammy's work has been recognized locally, nationally, and globally for its innovative approaches to breast cancer survivorship and overall wellness. Reverend Tammy is visionary and artistic director for the Carrie's Touch Breast Cancer Exposed Calendar Project, a cutting-edge calendar that takes an artistic approach to awareness and education and has been distributed globally and is currently in 8 countries. She wrote, developed, and implemented the HOPE Peer Nurse Navigator Program in Ghana, West Africa, to educate and support women with breast cancer in Africa. The program has been presented to and accepted by the African Organization for Research and Training in Cancer and the World Cancer Congress as cutting-edge training on an international level. Reverend Tammy also provides messages of hope to breast cancer patients in Johannesburg, South Africa. Reverend Tammy penned the number one bestseller, The Power of Hope, Reclaiming Your Life After Tragedy, which tells the story of how she daily navigates the murky waters of trauma, grief, and loss. Reverend Tammy's TEDx talk entitled Toxic Strength dismantles the strong Black woman trope to be all things to all people all the time while suffering alone in silence and gives those facing trauma permission to take the necessary time needed to pause and heal. Reverend Tammy earned her degree in Human and Community Services from St. Mary's College, Morgana, California. She earned her Master's of Divinity and Master's in Community Leadership from the American Baptist Seminary of the West, Berkeley, California. Reverend Tammy received her cancer coaching certification from the Cancer Journey Coaching Training Program, but she is a master group facilitator for those facing tragedy, grief, and loss, mentor, and spiritual advisor for those seeking a deeper understanding of God who is bigger. Reverend Tammy received the Distinguished Honorary Doctorate of Philosophy degree in Business Administration and Entrepreneurship from Trinity International University of Ambassadors. Reverend Dr. Tammy Denise was born and raised in Indianapolis, Indiana, and currently resides in Sacramento, California. She is an ordained minister, nonprofit executive, community researcher, coach, international speaker, and best-selling author. She is the mother of 3 adult children and the grandmother of 2. Hi, Tam. Thanks so much for being here today. When I created this podcast, you were like on the short list of people because what you do in this world is so important. We've known each other for a long time, and I couldn't just not have you on here. So thanks for coming here today and having this conversation with me.
Thank you. It is an honor to be here with you, my friend, my brother, my colleague, to do this important work. So let's talk about it.
Aside from your very long bio and the amazing things you do, is there anything else that you want the listeners to know about yourself now before we kind of hop into what we're going to talk about today?
Yeah, before we hop into it, I think the bio are about the things that I've done, but I think the most important part on the bio is probably the last few lines when I say I love God. I'm a follower of Jesus Christ, and not to be confused with an oppressive Christian who can't see a bigger God. And my three incredible children and my two grand loves that just bring me all the joy that I never knew I wanted or needed.
I love that. Ever since I've known you, that's the core of what I see too. I mean, there's so many letters in front of your name and after your name and all over, right? But there's so much that you do to help this world out and help create a better place for people to be in this world. And I know everywhere you go, it's just pure love from you. That's what I've always felt, which has been really cool. Ever since the moment I met you, it's just like, I always think you're just like this big fluffy marshmallow cloud that just encompasses and just loves on everybody around them. So I really appreciate that about you.
I love that. Thank you so much for saying that. I do believe that my life was saved. 5 days ago, I celebrated my 19th breast cancer anniversary. And you know, 19 years ago at this time, I had no idea what to expect. You know, I had gotten conflicting information from my oncologist. On one hand, I had a very treatable cancer. On the other hand, the statistics facing Black women with breast cancer and our mortality rate being 41% higher than that of white women. So I was confused. I was 39 years old. I had three children at home, a single mom. And with regard to where we are with this conversation, my biggest concern, Joe, was how am I going to take care of my three children? I was gainfully employed. I was doing very well raising my children. I had savings and all of those things. But understanding, or at least learning about breast cancer and a breast cancer treatment journey, I knew that many of my reserves could be jeopardized because living on disability is a fraction of what your full income is. And that was my biggest concern. How am I going to survive this and still come out on the other side, you know, mentally, emotionally, spiritually well, but also financially well?
Yeah. When I decided to do this podcast, right, money and racism, and just kind of leave it at that. Like I say, I thought of you one of the first people because I know your story and kind of what you went through. And I know what you do to advocate for the women that you take care of now through Carrie's Touch. Anytime we have a large financial hit for anything, especially health related, I mean, the healthcare in the United States is not the best, hasn't been the best. There's lots of conversations. And so that's why having this conversation with you today, I think it will encompass a lot of, I hope, for what the theme of this whole podcast is about, right? Like you just mentioned, the mortality rate for Black women in the same situation is much higher than white women. Mm-hmm. And we look at that, the system is like, why is that, right? Money's one piece of it, but the system itself is also set out to not help the Black community at all.
Yeah.
Right. And in a lot of ways, be detrimental towards it.
Yeah.
And, you know, these are things I didn't know before I started talking to people, doing my own research, doing my own studying, and kind of like coming out of my own white little bubble, as I'll call it. Right. And be like, holy cow, like, how is this possible that we're not all equal? Right. Cause that's the way I used to live. And that's was blown away a long time ago. It's crazy to be put in that situation, not know what to do. I want to call this out real quick too, that your number one concern wasn't about your health, but it was about, am I going to be okay financially so I can make it through this?
Yeah, because I knew that breast cancer was impacting me and there was so much I didn't know at that time. But what I did know is that I didn't want the impact on my children to be so great that they weren't able to function. Like my boys were 10 and 11 and my daughter was 17. So all still in the home. My boy's in elementary school. My girl is, you know, in her senior year of high school. And I didn't want their lives to be disrupted. They had robust lives. They were all in extracurricular activities multiple days a week. I'm driving myself and my village. We're driving the children to their various activities. And if I wasn't going to be able to do that, what would it look like for me to budget to still make that happen? Gas 20 years ago is not what it is today, but 20 years ago, it was still pulling on your purse strings. My boys, they're boys. You're a male. You know how men eat, no matter what your size is. My thinnest son ate the most. So, you know, and they were hungry every 25 minutes. They needed a snack for them. Literally, most of the time was a full-on meal to get them after school and then dinner and then a before bedtime snack, because otherwise they wake you up in the middle of the night, Mom, I'm hungry. So figuring out how to manage that. And my village was so incredible. And so for listeners that may not understand Black culture, may not be familiar with some of the terms that I use with regard to my village, a village is just that, you know, instead of saying my team, my community, my family and friends, I refer to all of those persons as part of my village. So my village was really creative, Joe. And I think this is something that's special to communicate to your audience, especially if this is going to reach breast cancer patients. And you don't have to be Black. You can be any ethnic background. But my village decided to give me a celebration of life shower. That term, celebration of life, is typically synonymous with a homegoing of some sort, a memorial service, a funeral, something of that is remembering the dead. But my village said, no, we want to acknowledge your life as it is right now. And we want to figure out how to pour into life. So they took the term, they co-opted it and said, hey, we're going to call this a celebration of life shower. They reached out to people and said, hey, we're having the celebration of life shower for Reverend Tammy, and we want you to come. We don't want any flowers. We don't want any cards. We want every penny that you have to donate or intend to donate. We want it used for Reverend Tammy and her family. They were like, don't spend $4 or $5 on a card. If you're going to donate $10, donate $14 instead of spending the money on a card. Joe, let me tell you this. I am always leery to talk about the amount of money that was raised because I don't want it to be a deterrent to someone who doesn't have a village the size of mine. What I will say is that this effort raised enough money to sustain my family for a year and a half. So they basically made up the amount of money that I was losing in disability for a year and a half through my cancer journey. So it was several tens of thousands of dollars that was raised. And that's one creative way that we figure out how to make our money work for us. Tap into our villages and our homes and our communities, and being open and willing to accept the help is the other part of it.
Yes.
So it's one thing to have people want to give the money, but it's another thing to be able to accept the help. So I'll pause right there, but I've got more on that with regard to Carrie's Touch.
I think that's super important in my coaching framework that I've built, right? I have an R, right? I have an acronym I use, but R is one of those in that sense for relationships.
Mm-hmm.
It's super important that we have these relationships in life. And most of us already have these kind of relationships.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you touched on something that's so important. I think we always have two hangups. One, we have the hangup of asking for help.
Yes.
And then we have the other hangup of receiving the help.
Mm-hmm.
And there's people who want to do that. It's some of the hardest things we have as humans to do is really ask for it and then receive it. And I think receiving sometimes is actually even harder.
Absolutely.
We feel like we have to get back or do something else. But that's so cool. That's a cool part of your journey and your story that you had a village that could take care of you and that you loved yourself enough. I'm going to say that you loved yourself enough to say thank you to them and accept it while you're going through something so life-changing and life-altering.
Yeah. And you used the word could, a village that could take care of me. Joe, when I opened myself up to be able to receive, my village expanded beyond folks that I knew. I received checks in the mail from people I had never even spoken to. I didn't even know who these people were. It was kind of like Pentecost, the fire caught on and everybody just chimed in. And this was literally people across the nation. So many times we have that issue within Carrie's Touch. We have financial resources that are available specifically for Black women to help navigate the finances of breast cancer journey. Under no circumstance are we there to fix anybody's financial problems or anything like that. But when you're diagnosed with a chronic life-threatening illness, your entire world becomes absorbed in that thing. It's understanding it, understanding the treatment. And most folks want to know, what is my prognosis? Am I going to live? If so, how long am I going to live? If so, how well will I be able to live? And you don't really have time to think through a lot of the money aspects of navigating a health occurrence. I'll just call it that. So Carrie's Touch put together a fund that helps women with the fund. And I will tell you, Joe, when we offer these resources to Black women specifically, 90% of the time their answer is, oh, no, you don't have to do that for me. Give it to someone else who needs it. So my response is, well, do you need it?
Because the answer is yes, they do, right?
Yeah.
And it's so funny with people when you talk about money like that. my coaching business, right? I see this all the time where people are really hard to accept that. They're like, oh no, because we've been conditioned to just deal with what we have. And when it is something life altering, like health, like you're saying, there's so much that goes into that. You're learning new stuff all the time. Your brain is overwhelmed. It becomes traumatic in a lot of cases for people, right? So now they're dealing with a new type of trauma, and then they start wanting to deal with the money side of it too. And then all that money trauma comes up. It can become overwhelming.
Absolutely.
I can definitely see why people struggle through health crises like they do.
Yeah. And Joe, there's another side to it as well. Specifically for Black women, we have been conditioned to care for others at the sacrifice of our own well-being oftentimes. And we have never been taught that we are worthy to receive unconditional love or financial support, or sometimes even something as simple as a hug. We've never been taught that we are worthy to receive those regular experiences and encounters in life. With Carrie's Touch and our research project with UCLA, Project SOAR, Speaking Our African American Realities, we have had the opportunity to study Black women and the phenomenon around the strong Black woman syndrome and its impact on decision-making for Black women diagnosed with breast cancer. And so if in that study, we have just found that Black women oftentimes do not expect that someone would select them for just what is considered general kindness, and especially when it comes to financial resources.
It's too bad. Through the growth I've done and looking and talking to people, I can definitely see that. And it's unfortunate that that's the culture that's portrayed, you know, amongst Black women in the Black community, because there are resources out there.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get too much further into this, I want to step back just a second for those listening. So, Tam,
yeah,
what is Carrie's Touch? Because you mentioned it a few times, and so I just want to have you explain what it is, what you do there, so people have an idea when you mention that.
Yeah. So Carrie's Touch is a breast cancer organization that was co-founded with my late sister and I because of the lack of support that I received when navigating my breast cancer journey. And so we're a 501c3 nonprofit organization whose focus is Black women diagnosed with breast cancer. And so cancer is a nasty disease that knows no bounds, and it doesn't discriminate. It doesn't care what race, color, or creed, everybody can be diagnosed with breast cancer. And so I want to make it clear that even though our target audience is Black women, we will serve anyone, including males. So if there are any males, non-binary people, trans males, we don't care about that. But our target audience is Black women, because Black women die at 41% higher rates from breast cancer than white women do. And Carrie's Touch really is in existence to reverse that statistic, to increase the number of Black women surviving this disease.
Nice. Thank you. What you do is just so cool. And I think that's where a lot of cool ideas are spawned from, is a need that we have. You had a need. You didn't find any way to fill that except for you and the people around you and the people they knew. So to have an organization like this is just amazing. It really is. And I can't say enough good about the work you do, Tam. Like, it's pretty amazing helping out these women who need help through different resources. So what kind of resources do you supply or do you help with at Carrie's Touch? Because it's just not financial, right? You have other things that you do for them?
That's correct. Yeah. So of course, there's the financial resources. And when I share with women who have been diagnosed based on my experiences, the first year you're diagnosed, it's a physical game. You're trying to get the cancer out of your body. You're trying to make sure that you prepare your body for prevention of any future diagnosis. So sometimes that's surgery, that's chemotherapy, that's radiation, that's oral chemotherapy and other oral types of treatments that come along. And all of this happens so fast, Joe. One day you're skipping along and just enjoying life and being just happy and gay. And then the next day, you're thrust into this breast cancer world and you are forced to make life-altering decisions on just a little bit of information. Some people have children and families and husbands and so on and so forth and jobs and all the things. And other people, their network is not quite as large, but they too are still going through the mental anguish of suspicion that there's something happening in your body, to navigation or discovery of what that thing might be, to actual diagnosis, then discussion about treatment plan, then you're in treatment. I know that probably all sounds like a whirlwind, but that's just a snippet of the experience. And so when we talk about what Curious Touch offers, we also offer mental and emotional support for women who are navigating this journey. And that comes in the form of our support group. Again, we want to celebrate life. We don't believe in celebrating death in the sense of sitting around, woe is me, waiting on death to come. We all know that death is coming to each and every one of us. We don't know what will be that cause for when we take our final breath, but we know that death is coming. So we celebrate life. We are out in the community. We recently did an excursion to the theater. This is a sidebar, but it's also very connected. I have always loved the arts. I've always loved performing. I performed in high school, in college, and throughout my life until 10 years ago. I had a pretty tragic 2013. And as a result of that, I just kind of stepped back from theater and other things that I loved. And so for the first time in 10 years, I actually was cast in a play and accepted the role. And so I am performing. Curious Touch invited 25 incredible breast cancer patients and survivors to a night at the theater, and we just had a phenomenal time together on and off stage. I mean, it's a long answer, but it is a snippet of the why and the what we offer to breast cancer patients specifically.
I love that. See, that's what I'm talking about. This is so good what you do, because there are, I mean, a lot of organizations out there that will do some education and some financial, but I think what sets you apart for what you do is you really want to take care of these women.
Mm-hmm. We do.
Yeah, the financial parts there, because that's important. Education is there to say, hey, here's how you're going to go. But the support, mm-hmm. The story with my wife and I and mental health stuff for the last 15 years, right? Sometimes we've had the resources to take care of what she's needed. We found that support piece, right? And it's been really helpful. That sometimes outweighs, right? As if the other life things are taken care of, that support piece is invaluable to have people there to help just sit with you. Mm-hmm. You know, with stuff like this that's going on, you could probably surely attest that you've had good days and really bad days during the process.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And having a nonprofit organization that focuses on Black women, you know, unless you're just checking boxes that research has evidence on, well, we know that there is a huge underrepresentation of diversity in clinical trials and in academic research. Right? We know that for a fact. So if we start talking about Black women and our needs, and there's no research or data that supports that, then the powers that be, whomever that may be, determine whether or not our cause is worthy of their dollars. And I want Curious Touch, and I look forward to Curious Touch the day that we are funded at a level that some of these other organizations do. They don't identify their target audience, but since the murder of George Floyd in the public square, you've seen more Black people on some websites than you have their entire time in existence over these past 4 years since COVID happened and the murder of George Floyd. So I am grateful to persons like yourself and your wife, Debbie, and other like-minded friends that we have who donate to Curious Touch, who find not just our cause, but our women worthy of your financial resources. That really means a lot. And another thing that we do is we offer what we call adopt a family. And so throughout the year, we find out who we helped and whose need was the greatest, who has the largest number of children, you know, who's raising their grandchildren or whatever unique situation it might be. And we adopt that family. And some years we've been able to give folks an extra couple thousand dollars. Some years it was very lean and we were able to give $250. And this year is one of those years that's in between the two. But being able to adopt a family or being able to reach out to a survivor that we've helped throughout the year and say, hey, what's your Venmo? We want to give you a holiday gift just to take the pressure off a little bit. What we do is definitely very important and definitely very necessary. And we take donations all year round and we put that money in our holiday Christmas bucket. And we look forward to blessing women during the holiday season.
I love that even more. Like, I didn't know that you guys did that. Like, I know a lot of what you do, but there's some things I'm like, mm-hmm. That's really cool. a holiday season during different times of the year to be able to ease that burden just a little bit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Could be the difference between, you know, making it and not making it, I think, for some families.
Yeah.
Just that financial pressure.
Yeah.
Because again, when money gets tight, when things happen, like that's the first thing we usually go to. How am I going to pay for this? How am I going to survive past this?
Right.
You know, like you talked about for your own situation, are my kids going to be able to eat?
Yeah, for sure.
We have families and all these things. And I think that's the part that sometimes we don't look at, right? As humans outside the medical, we hear about these medical conditions. We're like, oh, that must suck. I'm so sorry. But what about all the ramifications and kind of that domino effect into other things in their life?
Right. Yeah.
To be like, hey, what else is happening?
Right. And Joe, that is so crucial because, you know, a cancer diagnosis doesn't come when you're on vacation chilling. You know? You know, a cancer diagnosis comes in the middle of lifing, all of the things that you're already trying to navigate. And for me, while I wasn't on vacation chilling, I was living the life that I wanted to live. I had adequate health insurance. I had adequate income to help, you know, as a single mom, to be able to care for my children and have us in extracurricular activities. I was performing 3 to 4 shows a year. I was active in my church. I was doing all the things that I wanted to do. And even with that, having a cancer diagnosis in the middle of all of that, it just wreaked havoc and turmoil. And like you said, I reverted right back to, will my children be taken care of during this season? And Joe, what it took me back to is possibly where my money story began. I did not have an ideal childhood. I lived in a home where domestic violence happened regularly, not daily, but definitely weekly. I'll say not daily where we could see it, but definitely weekly where we could see and or hear and experience domestic violence. And as a result, my siblings and I had to live with our grandparents. You know, grandparents are older, and so they died before we grew up, and then life was difficult. We raised ourselves on the streets predominantly. I had various friends. So money wasn't always available to me, is what I'm getting to. And that became my mentality, that there is money out there because I could see it. I saw it in my friends. I saw it with other family members, but money wasn't available to me. And so that was a whole different experience. And I had to unlearn that embedded belief that money wasn't available to me because money was so scarce for me growing up. I went to college, Joe, not because I wanted a better education or a better future. I went to college because I heard about room and board. And I came to understand that room and board meant that I had a place to sleep that was mine, and I had access to food. Changing that narrative in my own life really came as a result of my belief and understanding of who God is. And no, God is not, you know, my sugar daddy and my, you know, like that, but God is a God of abundance, and God is a God that has access to all of the things that are here on earth. And in God's word, God tells me that I am fearfully and wonderfully made. God tells me that I am worthy of God's unconditional love. God tells me that God has 1,000 cattle on a hill, and I have access to all of that. And that is where my money story started to shift. And I stopped living in the scarcity mindset and scarcity beliefs and started living in abundance and knowing that abundance is available to me. As I continued to navigate life, I mean, I'm human. I'm not perfect. Every time we get a no on a grant application, my first response is always back to default of these women aren't worthy. I'm not worthy. We're not worthy. But then I quickly just auto-correct and say, hey, actually, we all are worthy.
There's a couple of things I want to take out of that. One, a lot of the money stories, right, our money beliefs that come to us that we fight as adults, whether we have a major medical thing or if we don't, like we're all fighting these, do come from how money is modeled to us growing up. In your case, it wasn't available. And whether you ate or you had a place to sleep, that was questionable.
Right. Yeah.
That's the thing as children is we're not taught, and we don't even know to at very young ages even how to challenge the world. We're just like, oh, this is just how the world works. So now these are the rules. Now I'm going to play within these rules.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's important because again, looking at how you've been able to shift that, and even now how, because that's the thing, like those money stories will sneak back in, right? Because that's learned behavior. It's so ingrained in us.
Right.
That I love that you said, like when you even get a rejection on a grant, you're just like, oh, and it's okay because we're all human, right? We have those emotions.
Absolutely.
And what I want to call out is it's what we do with those emotions is what, to me, right? And then what, how I teach, it's whether we find success or not, right?
Right.
And in your case, right, it's not getting bogged down by the, oh, we didn't get this grant. Well, maybe we just won't apply for grants anymore because that's probably not a good avenue for funding.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But you're just like, oh, okay. Have your moment. And that's totally cool. Have that moment. And I think in anything that we do in life, when we get that no, or we get, I've never had cancer, but I can equate it to, you know, if we get that cancer diagnosis, or for these women you support, have that moment to express that frustration, that fear, that anger.
Mm-hmm.
And then say, okay, so what's my solution? Who can I call? Who do I know who can help me?
Right. What's the solution?
But a lot of times we get stuck in that space, and then that doesn't get us to where we want to go.
Correct. Yeah.
And that's why having mentors in our life, coaches, friends.
Yes.
Like you have your village, right?
Yeah.
People to kind of come in and say, hey, we got a solution. Sometimes we need that.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. And when people get in a sticky situation, it's fight, flight, or freeze, right? I've always been fight. I am going to fight my way out of whatever the situation. Like I said, I received my diagnosis. I brought my village together. I said, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to navigate this space together. And then we're going to turn this into an opportunity to support and love on other women. And that's really the foundation of Carrie's Touch. But in that fight, flight, or freeze, I have always been that person. But, you know, I have people that are very close to me that are freeze or flee, which is avoidance. I say that financial freedom is available to all of us, regardless of whether we choose to turn our head away and look away from a difficult situation, or whether we go silent in the situation. What needs to happen, and I'm not turning this into a therapy session because I'm not a therapist, but I have had a therapist for 30 plus years, and some of the information that I have learned from her is that we have to go back to that place that actually taught us to fight, to flee, or to freeze, right? And so if I go back to that place, I remember growing up in this violent household, and I didn't have permission to physically fight. So I had to mentally fight, and I had to figure out, how are we going to overtake this person who is abusive to our mother and be empowered? And we did many, 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 many times. So for those who are flight or freeze, go back to what that was. And in some cases, you have to heal that thing. And in other cases, it's just acknowledgement. And for those of you that don't have a therapist or can't afford a therapist, write a letter to whomever it is, say whatever you want to say. And when you're finished with it, burn it up. The letter is not intended for them. The letter is intended for you. So get that stuff out and release it and acknowledge it.
I love that. It's so true, right? And I look at myself like on that same kind of fight, flight, or that lizard brain reaction, right?
Mm-hmm.
I found in my life that I'm a fighter sometimes, and I'm a fleer in other ways. And I'm like, oh, why am I fleeing, right? Like you just said, right? It's all based on some experience in my childhood, some trauma that, you know, same with me. I've had therapists and worked through a lot of personal development stuff. And I'm like, yeah, that's probably right. I can go back and pinpoint it to this time. Okay, I need to like go heal that. Because if not, then I'm going to keep doing the thing that I don't want to do, which is give up and just like be done with it.
Right.
It's so hard. And then when you add other factors on top of it, it can make it even that much harder.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I want to go back to when you got your diagnosis, because I think this is an important part of the overall story with everything we're talking about today, right? Because you were worried about finances, you were worried about your kids.
Mm-hmm.
You had a breast cancer diagnosis. But if you go back to that time, and for those who also go through the same thing, is breast cancer the only, I would say, physical ailment that you were dealing with at the time? Or did that cause other things to happen as well?
So it's a yes and no. When I was first diagnosed with breast cancer, we were actually in discovery because I was having some female issues, and we were trying to pinpoint what was causing the female issues. No diagnosis, no chronic illness or anything like that. But for the sake of keeping it PG for your audience, and women near 40 and over can discern what was happening. But nonetheless, we were trying to discover what was causing these female issues. And as a result, my doctor said, well, hey, you're 39, you'll be 40 on your next birthday. Let's just get a mammogram. And I got a mammogram, and thank God I did, because the breast cancer was diagnosed or discovered. It was an aggressive cancer. It had already started to spread. And I believe that my outcome would look drastically different had I waited that 9 months to get the mammogram at 40. And here's the kicker, Joe. Breast cancer was not on my radar. And I doubt that I would have gotten a mammogram at 40. So I didn't have any other chronic illnesses. I was at the top of my health game. I literally worked out 7 days a week. I fasted on Wednesdays. I prayed intercessory prayer for other folks on a regular basis. However, I am the exception and not the rule. Many women, Black women, that are diagnosed with cancer do have hypertension, cholesterol issues, some kind of heart disease potentially, diabetes, and all of those things come along with age.
And that's what I wanted to call out, because I didn't know what it is specifically, but I think it's important for people to know this could be a one contained health problem, but generally health problems aren't contained with one thing.
Yeah.
Generally, right? There's other things at play as well. And I think us as humans, again, we'd like to say, oh, they had breast cancer. And that was like the end of their journey.
No.
Even if they survived, right? That they just had breast cancer. Oh, whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But there's so much more, like it's so much more complex than just, hey, this one diagnosis and then you're done.
Yes. And Joe, to that, I will say that was pre-cancer. Now, on the other side of that, yes, there are other things. And you take medication, your doctor gives you some medicine, you read the side effects, you read the warning signs. And oftentimes on the warning signs, it'll say, this medication could cause A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And you're like, whoa, I don't want that. But then the next sentence is, your doctor has deemed that the benefits of taking this medication will outweigh the risk. I give that precursor because treatment for breast cancer that saved my life did have some side effects that I ended up with some other health challenges as a result of the treatment. And I want you to hear me and hear me well. My doctors didn't think I was going to live to see the coveted 5-year cancer anniversary. However, I just celebrated my 19th cancer anniversary.
Yeah.
Right? It's a win. And it's about perspectives. It's about all the things. I could say, oh my God, this chronic pain in my hip. Oh my God, this or that. Or, you know, I take high blood pressure medicine. I did all of these. I could say a whole lot of things. After chemotherapy, I started wearing glasses. You probably thought I've worn glasses my whole life. No, you know, I've only worn glasses for 18 years of my life, but I'm alive to wear the glasses. You know, I'm alive to acknowledge the physical pain that I might be in. I'm alive to address any discomfort that I might be experiencing as a side effect of taking the drugs that literally saved my life.
I love that. And that's what I love about you. Like I said at the very beginning, some big, soft, squishy marshmallow cloud that just wants to give you a hug. Like after everything you've been through, and right, this is only one small part of your life that we've even talked about today.
Yeah, yeah.
But after everything you've been through, you just are such an optimist on life is good. You know, there's bad things that happen to good people and we can make it through. It's all that state of mind.
Yes.
I want to call out one more time too. I want to go back to like the celebration of life thing. I didn't know that until today either, but that's such a cool concept.
Yeah.
Right? Because usually you do. Usually, but you hear about it like, hey, it's a celebration of life after they've passed away.
Right.
This is cool. Like, oh, hey, this is really bad, but celebrate you in what's happening and what's happened in life. And that's actually really cool.
Thank you. And what we do in the month of October is that we go to various locations where events are happening. And then on Sundays, we go to a different church. And our motto is that we are on our celebration of life tour to give flowers to survivors while they can smell them. We don't ever send flowers to funerals. We always give them to the living.
Oh, I love that too.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
May we all do that. For everybody listening, let's start doing that because that's way better than afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
I got one more question. I think we have enough time to finish this one out because you mentioned something I didn't know you were involved in. I know you're involved in a lot of stuff. Is there anything more you want to say about or even tell us a little bit about this research project you're doing? Did you say with UCLA?
Yes. Yeah.
So what's that all about? Like, I haven't heard about this yet.
That's a good note that you haven't heard about Project SOAR. Project SOAR is about 5 years old. I've talked about my journey and how I've used my journey to help me build Carrie's Touch and help other women navigate a breast cancer diagnosis and treatment experience. As a result, I couldn't understand why these women would say, no, I don't want your help. Give it away to someone else. And I literally, Joe, had to start saying, I will give it away and it'll be someone that it's not intended for. But I have to get rid of the money because I'm not going to send it back. You know, I was like, this money literally has your name on it. But if you reject it and someone else comes in and applies for it, I have to give it to them. And so I didn't understand that. It just was mind-boggling to me. I was completing my master's thesis of divinity, and I had to do a community project. And in the community project, I was like, okay, if one of the top 10 reasons why Black women are dying from breast cancer at disproportionately higher rates than white women is the fact that they just aren't aware, they don't know about breast cancer and or its treatments, well, I'm going to make sure that I go into the churches and I'm going to tell women about breast cancer. And I was, this project, I was scheduled to go into 5 churches. I went into the 5 churches. And after the first 2 churches, something became very apparent to me. And it's something that we've already talked about, that Black women had so much life happening to them on a daily basis that they literally did not have time. And many of them have said that they didn't have time for cancer. They didn't have time for treatment. They didn't have time for side effects. And so they would just not go to the doctor to get a mammogram or get the results or start the treatment for it. And I thought that was fascinating. I failed to prove my hypothesis that Black women wanted to know about breast cancer. And instead, in my own lack of academic research knowledge, I analyzed my data and I was provided an opportunity with the California Breast Cancer Research Program to join this program to learn how to write academic proposals to get funding for research. And so in that process, you have to find an academic partner because the academic partner has to apply for and get the IRB, the Internal Review Board, the blessing of this particular board. So I ended up with Dr. Annette Stanton with the psychology department at UCLA. And she was fascinated, intrigued by what I wanted to do. You know, I just kind of gave her some of the background that I gave to you all, but I also pitched the idea for the research that I wanted to conduct. And she loved it. And so that really is where it began. But one side note that I think is important, since we're talking about race relations here, when I went on this quest to find this academic partner, I wanted a Black woman. I wanted someone that I didn't have to explain the jokes to. I wanted someone that understood the culture. I wanted someone who understood what it meant and felt like to walk in the shoes of a Black woman, no matter what their socioeconomic status was. And we did that. We found a brilliant Black researcher. And unfortunately, things didn't work out. And we were left to find another researcher. And let me say, I'm not saying that this other researcher did anything bad or, you know, left us high and dry. It was a mutual agreement to end the partnership. And so we both walked away amicably. But the new partner is a white woman. And when my colleague brought her to me, you know, she goes, I want you to hear me out. I don't want you to say anything until I finish, you know, what I have to say. And she explains, she runs down all of her accolades and says, this is the part of her research that I think marries well with Carrie's Touch and what we are trying to accomplish and so on and so forth. And so she gets to the end of her spiel and she says, and she's white. I was like, oh, you gotta be kidding me. And so, you know, Terry said, just have a conversation with her. And I was like, well, I'm not promising you anything, but I'll have a conversation with her. So I have the conversation with her and it literally was love at first conversation. She is an incredible human. She has sensibilities of her privilege as a white woman. And she has a lot of compassion for the Black researchers that make up our Project SOAR team. And our team is truly what you would consider diverse. We have two African girls, a Haitian girl, a Black girl, an Asian girl, and then Dr. Stanton herself is white. And of course, I'm in there as well. So we have diversity in culture. We have diversity in ethnicity. And it is a beautiful project that we are looking forward to implementing interventions that can help Black women specifically navigate their breast cancer journey.
That's so cool. Thanks for taking time to talk about that. And it's so interesting. And I laughed a few times as you were talking, because through my studies and the groups I'm part of, I've heard plenty of stories like that, right? Because white people are not the easiest to work with when it comes to things racially, especially the experience of Black women.
Right. Yes.
We're just stupid about it. Either we want to, we do a lot of dumb things. And I'll say that collectively as white people, because that's one reason why I'm doing what I'm doing here, because we've done some really dumb things in the past, right? And we continue to do stupid things that are harmful to other people, especially the Black community.
Yeah.
So this is fun to hear about your research and what's happening. And my admonition for you, Tam, was let us know more about like what's happening there. Because I mean, I've known you for a while and I didn't know you were doing this. That's really cool. For everybody listening, like it just shows a personality. It shows that, hey, listen, we're real people with real struggles, real problems, but we also have real solutions. And that's why I definitely want to talk to you today, because you offer some real solutions for some real problems that are happening out there. It just warms my heart.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the invitation again. And thank you for what you do, because what you're doing is crucially important. The more that we know as a collective, the better life can be for all humans. So, thank you.
That's my goal, especially these two subjects. And I think at the end of these, some of these interviews are like, hey, how does this have to do with money and racism? Well, there's a lot for this conversation,
right?
Even if we're not explicitly calling it out, but there's a lot of monetary things that, you know, are based upon lack of education, lack of knowing, lack of resources. Like with your story, there's a lot of stuff in there that like, you didn't know if the resources you relied on in your village to be able to uphold you. And they did so wonderfully. We didn't even touch on this, but for anybody who really wants to know in the medical field, and when you look at Black women specifically in the medical field and medical research, there's a lot of really heinous things that have been done to Black women medically.
Absolutely.
And so there's a lot of those biases that are still in medicine today, which is appalling to me. I mean, we could talk about that for hours as well. But Tam, thank you so much for coming on today. Thank you so much for sharing your story and being willing to talk about this. And, you know, just the work you do with Carrie's Touch, this research project you do is really cool as well. I know it means a lot to the women you serve and to those who you allow to, and I'm going to say it that way specifically, that you allow and you let us help you. And I know from a nonprofit, sometimes you're like, we're just looking for donations and grants and things. And at the same time, you don't have to take money from everybody.
No, and we don't. We have turned money down before. There's a saying, all money ain't good money. Yeah, that's a thing.
So I thank you as well for, I know we've contributed in the past and we really respect you as a person. We love you as a person. And what you do is just so very, very important for the community that you serve, which is wonderful because there's not enough education. There's not enough support, both, you know, emotionally and financially for people going through really, really hard things in their lives.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's not easy, right?
Right.
And like you said, cancer doesn't know race, it doesn't know age, it doesn't know gender, it doesn't know anything but that it's just destructive.
Right. I was thinking throughout the interview, I was like, I need to interview you and have you be a spokesperson for us because you have done your research. You are very well versed in cancer, in breast cancer, and breast cancer in Black women. I was like, hey, I need to bring Joe on board and have him speak on our behalf.
I'm always fascinated with all these things, as I've done my own, I would say my own white man fragility racism journey, right? Which is what really led to this podcast. A lot of reading on financially. And that's the thing that really interests me. So I'm one of those persons when I find what interests me, how does it connect, right? And people hear me say this a lot. And I mean, can you keep saying it? I used to say, well, is that racist? I used to use my white man privilege to say, is that racist? And now I flip the script on that. And right now I say, well, I always say, well, how is that racist? There's no more, is it racist anymore? It's just, it is. So how are we going to find out how it is? And then how can we start deconstructing that from there?
Yeah, that's beautiful.
I think if more of us took that approach, then we can start finding better solutions to really, really archaic systems that don't serve the people at all. And that's my mission.
And that's a beautiful mission. And I'm grateful to you for that mission.
Thank you. And we'll do one interview at a time and we'll just see what I can do.
Yeah.
That's the fun. So, but thank you so much for being on here. We've talked a lot about Carrie's Touch. And from my perspective, that was intentional because I love your organization so much. If people want to support it, how do they support it? How can they find you? What can they do?
Yeah, we're on all of the social channels on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, X, which is formerly known as Twitter. I don't know how long we're going to be there, but nonetheless, yeah, we're on many of the major platforms. And our website is www.carriestouch.org. That's CARRIESTOUCH, Carrie's Touch, www.carriestouch.org.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Tam. And again, anybody, if you can be helped by Carrie's Touch, if you want to donate, if you want to go see what they're all about, please reach out to Tam. She's an amazing human being, and I wouldn't trust anybody else with a journey like that than her and the staff she has there. They're amazing. So thank you again, Tam, for being on today and just sharing a small portion of this important conversation. And for all you out there, if you have any questions, reach out, and I hope you come back for the next episode. Until then, we wish you all well. Thank you for joining us on Money and Racism. We hope we left you with something to think about. If you like the conversation, make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget, please leave a review. To find out more about the psychology and emotion of money, visit www.josephmburns.com. And if you or someone you know would be a great guest for the podcast, email me at podcast@josephmburns.com. Together, we'll work towards a more equitable and just financial world.